everything happened so fast. Deputy, she called classification, like, man, we got a juvenile down here, and he just been sentenced to life. So what they did was they grabbed me out the juvenile part and put me in confinement. And they were like, you can't come out of confinement because due to your sentence. And so it still hadn't registered in me that I got a life sentence, because I'm like, man, I couldn't believe that. I'm like, nah, this can't be true. They was like, well, Mr. Young, you know, you're not going home no more. You're going to die in prison. I'm like, who going to die? I ain't dying in prison. So I was in denial of that because it happened so fast. It's just like one day I'm 15 years old and I'm missing society. Then the next I'm out and you telling me I ain't going to never go home? That's kind of like hard to deal with. And I couldn't grab the concept of that.
Monitored. If you believe this should be a private call, please hang up and follow facility instructions to register this number as a private number.
To accept this free call, press 1. To refuse this free call, press 2. If you would like to thank you for using Securus, you may start the conversation now.
Yo, people, y'all already know what it is. I told y'all, and we're going to deliver, people. We on the air with my homie, my brother, someone that have a whole lot of knowledge of what's going on in the inside. And today is his first episode, one of many, on the Truth Story Podcast Network. Y'all already know what it is. Every platform, Kevin Evans. What's going on, people? What's going on in there, bro?
What's up, big bro, man? You know, everyday life in the penitentiary, most brothers, they got freedom on their mind. You know, so when we think about this freedom that's going on across the country, and particularly in Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania is like one of the worst states when it comes to freedom. Most states is letting people go and shutting prisons down. Pennsylvania is building prisons and locking people up. So, you know, when it comes to the mentality of the men, you know, we got a couple of district attorneys who are trying to, you know, bring about freedom for the brothers. But overall, you know, commutation, courts, legislation, we one of the worst states when it comes to freedom. So a lot of men is trying to come together and do things to bring about freedom.
I mean, but tell the audience a little bit about the morale, how these issues tend to shape the morale inside the prison. What is the morale inside the prisons right now as people wait for the long-awaited decision that we are waiting for, PA Supreme Court, the Derrick Lee case? What is the morale?
Well, the morale is high because, you know, a lot of times brother in here are more optimistic than realistic. But with the oral arguments that they had, the court seemed to be focusing on a lot of unfairness that second degree brings about. You know, they talked about a legal concept called mens rea, which means, you know, dealing with malice and state of mind, you know what I mean? And they saying that they got kind of a windfall inside of legal terms called a windfall. They had to prove that a felony occurred and then a homicide, but not necessarily prove state of mind. A person didn't intend to kill, you know what I mean? Or, you know, legal analysis like that. But the morale is extremely high when it comes to that. But when it comes to, like, other areas like commutation, it was real high when it came to when Lieutenant Governor Fetterman was in. Then it kind of leveled off, you know, with this new administration. You know, Krasner's in office, and, you know, the morale is high with that. But it comes down when he can throw out 134 drug cases with the stroke of a judge's pen, and he makes the homicide cases, you know, jump through hoops. You know what I mean? We got to get H files. We got to get evidentiary hearings. We got to get postponements. We got to get opposition. We got to get this. And his retort might be, you know, drug cases is nothing, where homicide cases affect, you know, victims. And but what are you talking about when you're talking about people are actually innocent? What do you talk about when the level of misconduct by police in homicide cases is 10 times higher than just a police officer lying in a drug case? Inside of the investigations, they said police rape witnesses, rape innocent people. They intimidated people's sisters. They intimidated people's mothers. So the level of misconduct should call for, let's say, a more expedient resolution to these homicide cases. But the morale overall is pretty good with, you know, the second degree. Even the good work Krasner is doing, because we can't take away the good work that he's doing. It's just slow, arduous process. And then, again, the drug cases versus the homicide cases. You know, the guy in the law library is having a, you know, a field day with debating and analyzing that.
No, I'm glad you said that, right? Because a lot of time people out here got this Cinderella story with Krasner, right? And I always say, right, just because he's letting a lot of drug cases out don't mean that it's really making an impact. Because the really impact, if you really want to have an impact, then open up all them cases that Roger King had. Open up all them cases that these crooked-ass detectives had, right? And then we talk about who could get the benefit and who can't. But just going for the low-hanging fruit, that to me is not a Cinderella story. That to me is like, I'm giving y'all something so when I come around to ask for y'all vote again, y'all can vote for me. That's what that means.
Big bro, Suave, you so much right on it, right? But there's so many different law technicalities and nuance to that. See, our community itself should be in an uproar. City Council hasn't called for hearings on 50 years and plus of police misconduct. Our mayor,
FCI,
who we respect, and who a lot of brothers inside of the penitentiary supported, hasn't called for an investigation. Is another legal term called the level of misconduct. It's so egregious, we're trying to raise $100,000 to get some law firms to do a constitutional crisis lawsuit. The ACLU, the Abolitionist Law Center, you know what I mean? These types of organizations need to seek advice from these brothers that's in these law libraries up here. They say they do, but when we send our ideas to the street, they marginalize us. Like we just in here mental boxing with each other and don't real have no real contribution to the larger movement inside of PA.
I mean, that's the truth out here, right? But now you got a platform. Now you got a platform. Now you got the ear of millions of people, you know.
Yeah.
And now I think that it's nothing better than to hear from the brothers in the inside and for someone to give us the real deal. Because a lot of time, no matter if you serve 20, 30 years, if you've been on this side, you are disconnected with what's going on inside. That's fact.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, some of these brothers, they cannot speak on what's really going on the inside because they are in bed with some of these politicians and they don't want to look like that. I'm like them. And I know a lot of people on the inside probably don't understand this, but that's the truth. The brothers that you thought in the inside that was these radicals, politicians, they're out here sleeping with the enemy for grant money and for recognition for their organization, and that is facts.
Yeah, it's when you talk, I always say when I'm talking about this subject matter and other subject matters, ain't nothing like being taught right. So we don't have to scream names. They know who they are. You know what I'm coming from? But that's what's missing. What's missing is what's the voices of the inside coming out. You know what I mean? I've always taken our issues to the people. This is what my old heads taught me. Don't say you represent the people and you don't talk to that group of people. So this is what's being done on the outside. The organizations know who they are. I don't have to say no names, but they saying, oh, I represent what's going on the inside and not even communicating with the real brothers. Because you got brothers who got self-interest in here. Yeah. And not saying we can save, or we can help, not save, that's a bad word. We can help the masses if we just go to the masses and get some of the ideas. So this is what we're doing here. Real Street Talk, that's what we do. You know what I mean? We just registered the first political organization, Voters Block, SEL4PAC.org. They would go on there and register. But another email is Real Criminal Justice Reform 1@gmail.com. You know what I mean? Me personally, as a board member of Real Street Talk, co-founder of Real Street Talk, on the internal board of SEL4, my personal email, and I get back to people, my name is Kevin Evans. Can't forget it, it rhymes. My institution number is B as in boy, Z as in zebra, 3788. And I communicate with people all over the state, you know what I mean? A lot of the organizations all over the state, the ones that seem to be listening to the inside, so that we can work together to bring about help for everybody. You know what I mean? It's not about separating ourselves. It's about bringing ourselves together and really, really making a difference. Because I've been here. I got 35 years, and no real change has happened. None. We march, we rally, we protest, we beg, and they look at us like, ain't trying to hear it. So we got to do something else. That's why we go to the political. You know what I mean? And we looking for justice. We ain't using a political block to ask for nothing more than justice. What's just? What's fair? We always got to keep in mind, for those who may have or may not have committed their crimes, we got victims involved. We always have to keep them involved because we have victimized our community. Not that I'm guilty of my crime, but we was out there in them streets. But at the same time, some of the victims support us. And the system and the status quo still won't let us go when the victims say, I want him out. I want him punished, but I want him to have a second chance. And the system still won't let us go. So these are the unjust issues that SEL4 is looking to address. These are the unjust issues that Real Criminal Justice Reform 1@gmail.com and Kevin Evans, BZ3788. This is what I was taught, and this is what I'm bringing to your listeners to get involved in.
Well, not my listeners. Listeners. This is your show.
Our listeners. That's right. That's right, big bro. That's right.
This is your show. This is your spotlight. This is your platform. I'm just an engine that's helping take it to the people, right? Because I always believe, right, in sharing the platform, right? I own the network. I got 13 shows on the network, right? And it's all good, but what we don't have is somebody from the inside that's educating the people on what's really going on. So what can the people expect from you on this platform, you know, as... This is your first episode. What can people expect for you in the coming months, in the coming weeks? You know, what do you want them to do? What's your call of action to the community and to the people all across the country? Because this podcast is not only being heard in Philadelphia, it's being heard across the world. You know, how can people in different states get involved, and what's your call of action for them?
Well, my call to action is to really, really pay attention to the details of what I give. Because, like, today, I just hit a myriad of subject matters. Now, in future episodes, or when I get on the platform, I want to, like, target, like, say, like you brought up second degree.
You're already on a platform.
That's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. Like, second degree. I want to go a little bit further into that. The police misconduct in Philadelphia, I want to go further into that because NYU did a report, a whole other state. We got report after report about the egregiousness and what that means legally. You know what I mean? How egregious the misconduct in Philadelphia is. You know what I mean? Then the commutation process, how unfair and unjust it is. They just sat down, one of the board members, the psychiatrist, who was being inappropriate with victims and applicants. This is unconstitutional. You know what I mean? What do constitutional really mean? Fundamental fairness. Whether I'm going to get commutation or not, the process has to be fair. So when we talk about a particular subject matter going forward, you know what I mean? I want to target that subject matter and be clear with the public at large so that they understand what they're listening to. And the call to action is, again, when you register on SEL4PAC.org or contact me through Real Criminal Justice Reform 1 at gmail.com or directly, I will engage with you. I'll give you a direction on, like, contacting your legislature.
And what are your closing comments?
My closing comments are, we got to get involved.
You have 1 minute left.
Our community should be more outraged at the police misconduct. Our community should be more outraged at the taxpayer dollars going to lawsuits. Our community should be more outraged about the $20,000 the board members make, and they being unfair and unjust. You understand where I'm coming from? So the more the public knows, the more inclined they are to get involved. You know what I mean? So I'm telling you, Big Bro, this is very, very, very important. You know what I mean? Our family members that's close to us, they want to be informed. They want direction. And hopefully my contribution to your podcast is to inform the community so that they can get more involved.
Absolutely. And y'all heard it here first, people, live. This is not pre-recorded. This is live from inside one of the worst penitentiaries in PA, SCI Phoenix. And you listening to Kevin Evans. Stay involved, people.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
Look, that thing, that, what it does is...
This thing?
Yeah.
It's just, it's a camera. It also takes film.
Oh, all right. Okay.
It's a digital camera. Yeah. And this is a microphone.
Oh, okay. You know, I've been locked up 40-some years. I've been knowing.
Go back to your time before coming here.
What is this?
That is a
peach? Sparkling water. They don't sell stuff like this here.
Yeah.
Never.
When I got locked up, my twins were 8 months old. And that was the last time I saw them. I wrote them letters like every week for the first 20 years I was here. And by this time, now they're all adults. So I figure it's time for me to stop trying.
How could you take a 19-year-old person and just take the worst decision he ever made and hold him responsible for it for the rest of his entire life and not even consider that? He may have changed.
He was a thug on the streets 24, 25 years ago, and we're angry at that person, not realizing that that person no longer exists. Actually hasn't existed for like over 20 years.
Remurder. Second degree murder and armed robbery.
I'm serving a life sentence.
A life sentence without parole.
I was 18 when this crime happened.
I was 17 years old.
I was 18 at the time.
Yeah, come here, I was 17. I'm 8 years old now.
People who commit crimes should be held responsible. But how much punishment is enough for justice? As you listen to these men, ask yourself, do they deserve a chance at redemption?
I had time to reflect and what my life would be if I had to stay here. And then I started noticing the need here of the people that was illiterate. So I said, okay, well, I could do some good here. You know, so I started tutoring guys and I started feeling a self-worth. I said, you know, well, I could give something back like that. You know, all the while still dealing with the fact, you know, that I took a life, an innocent life.
If I happen to die here in prison, that's not something that I want. But I had to think about and take under consideration, I took another human's life. A young man, Damien, I went to school with him. He still was somebody's son. If I could go back in time and redo that, that would have never happened. It shouldn't have happened.
In the U.S., there are more than 50,000 people serving life without parole, 70% of whom are Black.
If you come here young, well, prison provides. So you never have to be responsible if you don't want to. It's hard to mentor in prison because prison isn't set up for you to bear the stress of responsibility and to grow from that. So, you know, you have to kind of seek it out your own.
With so many long sentences, America's prison population is aging. Taxpayers spend about $70,000 to keep every elderly prisoner locked up every year. So Angola created a hospice program. Prisoners volunteer to take care of other prisoners, basically people convicted of murder caring for the dying.
It gave me a purpose, and showed me a different side, compassionate side. And I probably sat with over 50 people to their death.
Man, you know, I ain't being no man, but my first patient was a guy dying of AIDS. When I'm looking at a man weighing 60-something pounds, like, man, you know, can't do nothing. So I used to pick him out of the bed, put him in a wheelchair, bring him in the bathroom, help him, bed him up, tease him, mess with him. But when I first was able to help a person, I just felt different.
Now, excuse the expression, but they wash all up the crack of another man's ass, all up under his nuts and all. It doesn't care what nationality or race he is. Is that man faking? Have that man changed? He might have been a character when he can't hear, but this man done developed character. This man done developed compassion. It come down to not so much what you done, but what have you become?
Volunteering, mentoring, education. New experiences gave these men new purpose.
Got a diploma from Culinary Art School from Baton Rouge Community College, and three certifications from the National Center for Construction Education and Research. You know, in the event that I ever went home, I could be an asset to society and not a liability. You know, I prepare as if I'm going home tomorrow. Even though I have a life without parole, I try to prepare as if I'm going home tomorrow, because who knows what might happen. I'd rather go prepared than go unprepared.
Do we really want to be a country where there's no amount of growth that will ever give someone even a chance to leave prison? A country that's fine with endless punishment, but never with mercy.
That's the worst part. Knowing that I'm a changed man, knowing that I have the skills to go be a better person in society, knowing that I want to do better in society, and knowing that I can do better in society, and not having the opportunity to do that because I have a life sentence without parole.
But we have a solution. Second look reforms would offer a chance at parole for those who have transformed themselves and who've already served a significant portion of their sentence. To be fair, there may be lifers who haven't grown, but for the many who have, they deserve a second chance.
Ask yourself, when you were 16, 17 years old, are you the same person? Did you even think the same way you did now? No. That's human nature. People change.
If rehabilitation is a process, there should be an end to it. There's no, you get to a certain grade level and there's not, you know, high school and college and, you know, you could pursue undergraduate and then graduate studies. There's none of that. It's just life sentence.
A few states have implemented changes in the criminal justice system, including second look reforms. And some of these men have actually gotten out. But they're only a small fraction of those serving life without parole. Now, if you're concerned they might harm someone else, less than 3% of lifers who are released are rearrested. And when they are, it's frequently for a technicality, not a violent crime. In other words, lengthy prison sentences don't improve public safety. Over time, Americans could save billions of dollars if some of these older reformed men are set free.
I've been here longer than I've been with my family. So sometimes I question where I'm from. I'd be tempting to write my mom and them and say, if I die, leave me here. Don't come get me. Don't bury me with them. I don't know them no more. Bury me with my friends.
I know without a doubt I'm going home.
if I die here, whether it's tomorrow or, God forbid, 25 years from now, my body will not stay here. I'm leaving Angola. I'm not going to be buried here. Somebody who says, I want to be buried in Angola, that's the saddest part of what a life sentence does to you.
I make sure that my life is very purposeful. Every time I invest myself into someone else, I free a part of myself. A part of me will leave here with you. I'm going to love people so passionately until a part of me will always live outside of the gates of Angola.
I have called plenty here and it's been changed. Well, now, I hope I'll be lucky enough to get out. I'll go somewhere and make me a living. I'm sorry again. Yeah. They say the older you get, the more you learn. Well, I've learned a lot of things, you understand? So.
Everything happened so fast. Deputy, she called classification, like, man, we got a juvenile down here, and he just been sentenced to life. So what they did was, well, they grabbed me out the juvenile part and put me in confinement. And they were like, you can't come out of confinement because due to your sentence. And so it still hadn't registered in me that I got a life sentence, because I'm like, man, I couldn't believe that. I'm like, nah, this can't be true. They was like, well, Mr. Young, you know, you're not going home no more. You're going to die in prison. I'm like, who going to die? I ain't dying in prison. So I was in denial of that because it happened so fast. It's just like one day I'm 15 years old and I'm in society. Then the next I'm out and you telling me I ain't going to never go home? That's kind of like hard to deal with. And I couldn't grab the concept of that.